so nice, so that's what I like. Is that
I say the hip hop, you just don't stop it, and just get ready to jam. The Disco Daddy Wide World of Hip Hop Radio Show. Every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, only on 5Live.com, with special guests every week. Don't miss it.
Hello out there, Disco Daddy here. Welcome to another edition of Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Today, one of our special guests, Charlie Prince. Very prolific hip hop artist. He's probably best known, and we're going to get into this, for a hip hop anthem which everybody knows, but very few people know who wrote it. The Roof, The Roof, The Roof is on fire. Well, this man, along with his group, the Dynamic Three, came out with this record back in the 70s. It probably added fire to what was already a hot, hot new commodity, hip-hop. Tim Charlie Prince on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop. How you doing today, my brother?
Oh, everything is good so far. Maintaining.
Okay, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. We want to get into your story. And as you describe it to us, as you start back in the early years of your life and how you fell into hip-hop or got into it consciously, just give us some of the flavor also of what was happening around you at the time. You know, the Park Jams, a lot of people who don't live in New York may have heard of Park Jams, but they may not know exactly what it was and exactly how important they were to the building of the foundation of hip-hop. So, King Charlie Prince, you got the mic, starting with your early life.
Well, it all started out, I was a crate carrier. I used to carry crates for a brother named DJ Cool D. He was like my mentor when it came to you know, doing music. He was a DJ, and during that time, I used to, you know, be, I used to be behind the ropes, not behind the ropes, but outside the ropes, and I used to see all the
Okay, what
guys.
Period are we talking about, and how old were you then? What period did you?
I say, let me see, in 79 to 80. And
okay.
When I used
to, just this record was starting to be made in hip hop.
And
okay.
I started out watching him outside the ropes DJing, and I used to see all these other cats behind the ropes, you know, on a mic saying, yes, yes, y'all, 1-2, 1-2, and all of this. So I'm like, wow, I want to do that. So I made myself available as a crate carrier just because I wanted to find out where this brother lived. And come to find out, he was living in the next building from me. So I carried the crates up to his house, and I saw all these speakers he had up in there, all these crates of records and albums. So while he was putting stuff away, he let me get on his turntables and play with it a little bit. So, because I started out DJing first. And I used to, And I used to be mixing a little bit. So after that, it kind of got a little boring to me doing the mixing and stuff. So what made me really get into the hip-hop is the brother next door from me named MBG. We was enemies at one time because because his sister didn't like me for some apparent reason. But one day he just knocked on my door and asked me, did I want to do a show in New Haven, Connecticut? And I'm like, why is this guy asking me this? But I said, okay. But because I was bad in school, my mother didn't approve of it. Until I told her it was from the dude next door. He was a good guy. You know, all the parents liked him. So when she found out it was from him, she said, okay, you can go. So we went to New Haven, Connecticut. But before we went to New Haven, Connecticut, I found out that he asked another brother named Rick, who was my other partner. Mm-hmm. Now, me and him had a beef in school because we used to go to the same school. And then and then Rick found out I was going, so he was like, yo, I don't want him to go. But Greg took it anyway, MBG, you know. But the funny thing is, after all of that, we went through with him, with me and Rick, after we did the show in New Haven, Connecticut, we done forgot about all of that when we was going through. You know, because we saw we was rocking the crowd, and it was
right,
you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
this was during the time.
That's
now, MBG, at the time, he wasn't down with us as a rapper. He was just like,
mm-hmm.
he was just a relative of the family that we was doing this work for, you see? And then
mm-hmm.
when we got back, after we finished rocking Connecticut, New Haven, we came back. We was like the Temptations, trying to figure out a name of the group. We was running around like, what are we going to call ourselves?
Yeah.
And then we started out with Devilish 3. Because when we was in New Haven, they didn't have a name. The people was calling it Charlie D and the crew, because back then I was called Charlie D. So they used to call it Charlie D and the crew. But then when we got back to New York, we was trying to figure out a name. So we started out with the Devilish 3. And then we went into this MC battle because there used to be a Your Spot across the street from our building called, it was a Burger King at one time, but then they turned it into a club. So we went over there and entered into a battle with some other cats, and it was a couple of groups, and Rockmaster Scott, he was a DJ for another group. And so my DJ, we didn't have a DJ that was actually on point with us. He was just with us because we knew him. That was the dude that taught me the DJ mixing Cool D. So when we did the battle, we beat everybody. So the DJ we had at the time, he wasn't available all the time. So Scott met us the next day across the street. We set up a meeting where we can come together as a group. Because he left his group and came with us. after he came with us, then we started practicing and practicing with our routines and stuff, because we used to listen to Cold Crush, how they used to sing their little routines back then, and we used to listen to Fantastic Five. So we started picking out songs and making lyrics out of it. So we started entering places like the T-Connection and the Underground, Ecstasy Garage and then Sparkle and all them places back then. We started fitting in with everybody, Harlem World and everything. And then the guy that owned the club across the street from us, one day he asked us, did we want to make a record? We said, a record?
Wow.
We was like, yeah. So
yeah, I hear you. Let me interrupt you just for a second.
Okay.
You started just as records and recording contracts were being made, were given out. But maybe a year or so before, everybody's doing that for just the love of what hip-hop was.
Right.
The parties
we were just doing it in the parks, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
How did that change the game when, in your instance, people started giving out, you're no longer doing it for fun. Now you can obviously get a record if you get the attention of somebody. So this guy reaching out to you like this, what impact did that have on y'all as a group?
Man, when he set a record, it was like, okay, fine, we was down. But it took a year. So we just thought, at that time, we thought we were just messing with our head. Until one day he called us. He called us on our phones, and he told us to meet him at Unique Recording Studio. We said, so we got the address, and we went down to Unique Recording Studio, but we didn't have no song. So he said, I hope y'all have a song. So we was on the train going down. So I wrote a song real quick called It's Life, You Gotta Think Twice. I don't know if you remember that song. It's Life, You Gotta Think Twice. And we wrote that song on the way down. And then when we got there, of course, we was reading off the paper and everything because we didn't know it by heart. I wrote everybody's part. And then we got in the booth. We did our part. And then, of course, we had to come back because he said we weren't saying it the way we felt it because we were still reading on it. You know what I'm saying? So we got a copy of a cassette tape, took it home, practiced it, and then it was time to go back in there again. And this was during the time when WizKid, may he rest in peace, was alive, you know, because he the one that did the music for us. And so then we got back down there. It was on a Unique Recording Studio, and then we recorded It's Life, You Gotta Think Twice. And the next thing you know, a couple of months, the guy, the producer, he pulled up on the block And he opened up the trunk, and we saw all these records. he gave us 10 apiece, and we ran with it. We were so happy. We couldn't even believe it. And so after maybe 2 weeks more later on, we started hearing it on WBLS. I forgot the DJ that was playing it, but he was playing it. It was like an every morning song. And I don't know if you ever saw Five Heartbeats. When they heard their song on the radio, we were so excited and happy. And we used to,
I've been there too, my brother.
I know.
Very few people experience that feeling, even if they get into the business, because, you know, a lot of records are brought to radio stations and never played.
Exactly.
So you're one of select member of a very select club. Although there are hundreds of artists recording out there, very few have actually heard their songs coming out the radio.
Charlie
Prince on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Go ahead, Charlie.
And when they was playing, it was on a regular rotation for a good while. But the only thing that knocked our song out the box out that rotation was Sucker MCs. Because when Sucker MCs came out with Run DMC, all of a sudden, because it came out during the same time on Profile Records, and all of a sudden we started hearing Sucker MCs, and our joint got kicked off the rotation. So we still was doing shows like in Broadway International and things like that, but everything slowed down for us until one day the producer asked us, he wanted us to do another song. So that's when we did Request Line. Now, that was in 84. We did Request Line.
Wow.
I wrote the parts for everybody. And once we knocked that out, we didn't have a B-side. So the guy came up with The Roof Is on Fire. So I'm sitting there like, okay. I wrote all the lyrics to the song, but The Roof Is on Fire was set at the end of the song, so it really never had a hook. You know what I'm saying? Never really had a hook to the song.
Wow, yeah.
And this is why a lot of people got caught up, because they thought it was just a saying. You know what I'm saying? They never heard it like a hook, so everybody just started using it and using it, and then they found out that we was the owners of it. So so that's how people didn't know who we was, because they had heard Bloodhound Gang, they heard it used it, Head of State. It was in so many movies, 8 Mile, it was in Steve Harvey Show. I'm like, okay. And so I'm like, okay, that's cool. And you know, during that time, I thought, you know, if they only use it one time, you get paid. But I realized that when it's constantly played on the air in other countries as well, on TV shows, we get paid too. So I'm like, I like that. Because, you know, when I was growing up back in the days, I used to hate seeing repeats. You know what I'm saying? So today, I don't mind seeing repeats as long as my song is in it. You know what I'm saying?
Let's touch on this for a second.
Okay.
Copyright. Protecting your creation. Now, what did you guys have learned about recording the song? Obviously, Roof Is on Fire. You're hearing it in any party that you walk into. But the legal part of it, what do you advise young artists to do to protect themselves? What have you learned in the business about that?
One, if you don't understand it, ask questions. And if they try to explain the contract using big terminology, you tell them to break it down to the lamest terms so that you can understand, like, A, B, C, and 1, 2, 3. You want to learn it like that so that when you do sign that contract, you know exactly what you're signing for, because contracts is designed where the one who give you the contract come out on top. You know, it's always going to be like that. So this is why you have to make sure it's equal. You want full disclosure, equal consideration. You want all of that. You understand? And you got to make sure that you don't sign your publishing away. You know? And if you're an artist, copyright your name. Own it.
Okay. That's knowledge right there, and that's one of the reasons we do this show. Now, King Charlie Prince, you're cooking and smoking in 1985, one of the hot acts out there. And basically, Where do you go from there? You put the dynamic three. What happened?
Well, I'm still doing my thing. And mm-hmm. when it comes to the group, we still hang out like brothers. I mean, we all in different states now. I'm in New York, Virginia. Mm-hmm. My other partner's in Delaware. The other one's in Charlotte. The other one's in New Jersey. But we stay in communication. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And we'll come together if it's a big event. But if it's something small, we'll talk about it. We'll tell each other about it and keep it like that. But when it comes to like awards and things like that, we're going to show up.
Okay. Now, during the period that you started as a crate carrier, what were the influences? Who was out there actually? What groups, what individuals were around you while you were carrying crates that actually had an influence on you?
Well, the one who had an influence on me was this brother named DJ Cool D. He was a neighborhood DJ, but he had some type of connection with Cold Crush and all of them because he hung out with the big boys at the time. So he knew them and they knew him. But mm-hmm. as far as other than that, it was really Cold Crush and Fantastic. You know, during that time growing up, I couldn't even hang out at parties. I used to hear about them, but my moms didn't let me go because she used to be nervous, you know. But I would tell you what I used to do, though. I ain't going to front, though, because I used to bite rhymes now. Back in the
early days, right?
When I was in school, we used to have battles, and I used to be biting people rhymes, like, who was it, Raheem. I took some of his rhymes. I took somebody from the Funky Four. It was Rodney C. And I used to like these rhymes, you know, so I used to just make them look like I made them up. Until somebody heard the tape.
Well, see, it's good to be able to admit that. You know what I'm saying? Back in the day, it was probably normal for people to do that, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, they said some good rhymes. I used to want to fit in, you know, so I did that, you know?
How important do you think? Go ahead. What I was asking is how important do you think was the use of mixtapes in spreading the popularity of many of the groups just before records were made?
Wait. Break that down again.
Because that mixtapes, in other words, like the pause tapes people used to make, I don't know if that was a period while you were still carrying crates before your group came out, but I know after records came out, tapes were not, before records, the tapes were tapes of shows, artists and shows, doing shows like at the clubs and stuff. It wasn't actually the mixtape because they didn't have records then.
Right.
But after records came out, am I accurate in that assessment, that after records came out, then you started getting the two mixtapes?
Absolutely. That's when the mixtapes came out back then, but when they was doing it in the parks and stuff and, like, at clubs, you know, like when Cold Crush and Fantastic used to have the battles and Busy Bee stuff, mm-hmm. you know, used to battle Kumu B mm-hmm. and things like that. They used to have this store, and may he rest in peace, his name was Richard T. He owned the T Connection up in the Bronx. You know, he used to sell these cassette tapes, and people used to buy them tapes like crazy because they wanted to hear, if, you know, how they sound. They wanted, if they missed the show, they wanted to hear it. You know, those mixtapes, those are classics, man.
Now, see, that's something that very few people actually know about, and that's why we have people like you on this show, because the knowledge you drop, you guys go up in New York, you chop this up, you know all this back and forth. When you step outside of New York City, everything you say is a revelation to people. And it illuminates a portion of the song of hip-hop where very few people actually wasn't even called hip-hop. You see what I'm saying? It was a moment before records. And you come in just as records, and that's why it's very, your perspective is very interesting, King Charlie Prince. Now, today's artist, first of all, I know that you were part of a group of everybody else who back then felt, well, this is not going to be around for a while. but maybe you weren't. What was the feeling among you, your group, and the people about hip-hop as a new music form at the time? When you got into it, were you thinking you're part of something brand new that's going to be here for, you know, years and years, or was it something like, well, let's get on this before it fades away? What was that like?
You know, when we first did this thing, it was like, it's when we did first did It's Life We Gotta Think Twice, it kind of like only went in the tri-state area, so I kind of figured that it wasn't going to last too long. But then when we did like Questline and The Roof Was on Fire, and I did this big first concert, it was like, it was in Fayetteville, North Carolina. When I walked out on the stage, I didn't even have to do nothing. The people were just screaming, and I was like, God damn. I'm like Michael Jackson out here. It's like I could just put my hand up and control the crowd. I was loving that feeling, you know what I'm saying? another funny thing is because when The Roof Was on Fire came out, and my mom, she had a Christian girlfriend, and she was so happy, she went and took it to her girlfriend's house. She didn't know it had a cuss at the end. and she came back. She said, "Why you didn't tell me y'all was cussing at the end?" I said, "Mom, you just ran out of the house."
That's funny. Oh boy, that's funny.
You felt so messed up behind that one. Yeah, but after that, we just started doing shows with all these different artists. I mean, it was like, I didn't think hip-hop was leaving after that. I said, wow, it's going to be here for a good long time. And it stayed, last, but unfortunately, the business people got involved and changed it up.
There you go. There you go. That's one of the points that I wanted to make. The beginning of records changed the game. In more ways than one. No longer were the hearts and souls of these people into the new music for the fun of it. Now everybody wants to get a recording contract. So you get a lot of groups who, some groups were offered and some started to slide back on the wayside, and you never hear of them again. But we're glad that you're still around, King Charlie Prince, to tell us your story. And to still contributing to hip hop. Now, where can people find your music for purchase, my brother, on the internet?
iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, Tidal, TuneCore, Apple. It's on all the sites, you know. So, and I try to keep it going. I have a new album coming out now called Still Standing. You know, and I got a couple of features that's going to be on it. And hopefully they're on time to lay their vocals down, because I'm the type of person, like, if you take too long, I'm going to write a verse just in case. You know what I'm saying? I always do that. It's in my blood to do this, you know? And I don't have time for people sitting there saying, all right, I couldn't make it today. You know, I got to move on. And if I lay if I lay the whole track out, I redo it when they're ready, and then put them on it, and take one of my verses off, you know. But I keep it just like it is. It'll just be
two
versions.
Are you producing any other artists?
Not yet. Because I don't really want to do that, because the artists today, they think things are supposed to happen overnight, and that's not how it works. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And they're not patient like that. So I don't want to sit there and say this and say that, and then they looking for this and looking for that. So, you know.
Okay. King Charlie Prince, Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop, wants to thank you for your contribution to hip hop, sir, and thank you for doing my show. The roof is on fire. This is the man who wrote those lyrics, who wrote that song, King Charlie Prince.
All right.
We want you to know that we dearly appreciate your contribution to hip-hop. That's one of the hip-hop standards, and people sing it every day and have no idea who wrote that. Hopefully now there'll be more people being made aware of King Charlie Prince. Get on the internet, find your music, and you can still make a little change, my brother. Okay?
All right.
All right. We love you. King Charlie Prince, you've been listening to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Peace.
So wasn't it a great show? Come back next week, every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop Show. Man, it's a great one. Epic. See you next week. Bye.